As you're well aware, that there was no one standing at the front door asking for money when you walked in. You know, there's no one more or less in charge here. And you may wonder what's going on. Well, Theosophy tells us that the wisdom or the truth that it puts forth and the teachings that are found are the birthright of humanity. So that they can't be sold. They can't be procured in that manner. They have to be done through individual effort. And the purpose is for a truer realization of the self. And what comes about is a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. So these rooms are kept open each week to keep before the public these ideas. Of course, on Sunday mornings, you're aware that the meeting starts at 11 and runs till 12. And we take up a theosophical subject. We are testing our limits this summer, and we are taking up the proem in the secret doctrine, which is a test to our bravery to try to understand this. And the benefits may not be seen immediately, but they will in the months and years to come. Now, on Wednesdays, we take up a devotional study, something which we can readily practice on a daily basis. And we are reading that great Orphic mystery called the Bhagavad Gita. And ironically or not, it really talks about our class today in a very practical, common sense way of living the life. So this Sunday, or this Wednesday, I think we're on chapter 3. We begin chapter 3. And we always find it very profitable, even if we don't think we understand the class or what's going on. If we sit and listen attentively, there is something to be gained. So it's stated that there is no one in the front collecting money when you walk in, but we can't be as foolish to think that things just sort of happen by themselves. Because of all our goodwill, money just sort of pours in through the door. Well, if we were about money, maybe it would. But we're more about the ideas, and we're more anxious to see new people and new faces than we are to see money. But we like to remind all of our friends and fellow students that these doors are kept open through effort, like all of this work. And the effort is only contributed through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And as the philosophy directs, everything comes from within outward. So we do as we think best. We're just presenting an opportunity. Okay, now this morning we are taking up the proem. Well, the proem, as we had heard, is an introduction. And this introduction, we would say, is sort of outlined or presented to us in Greek philosophy as Mnemosyne, or the goddess of science and arts, but also the goddess of memory. And memory in the sense that we should remember our divine nature, our great history and past as an intelligent being, as a human being. And that what Theosophy shows, that there were those divine beings that formulated all these ideas so that we can partake, or with their aid, this great journey. And the journey is of self-realization. So in that search for self-realization, HPB presents us with this proem. Now, the we wanted to say that there were reasons for the presentation of these ideas now, in this time, and in this century, and in the last, was really to give keys to the initiation of the student into the soul wisdom. Just the keys. And that the purpose also was to give out that which could be given out as this time-honored recording of the occult side of nature. And lastly, the purpose was to fight back the materialistic science dogmatic ideas that were stifling and destroying the imagination and the intuition of humanity. So with these ideas before us, she presents us with the secret doctrine. There's an introduction, there's two introductions, then the proem. Now, the first week we talked about the symbolism. This week we're talking about the fundamental ideas, or we're beginning to. And then we are going to outline the stanzas and consider them in the light of the previous classes. Now, the symbolism to us gave us a conception or an idea that when we look at this symbol, we therefore have a response or a reaction. Well, we're going to refine that reaction this morning. We're going to look at the fundamental principle that is the underlying source, as said in our part, of all religions. So we'll summarize this, and then we'll open it up for questions and conversation.
Well, the part begins with the encouraging note that when one was exchanging in their mind these ideas, that it would clear out some of the erroneous views that pantheism and that Buddhists or occultists are atheists. And it goes on to state that rather than atheists, they are, all of them, philosophers. And that their objections and arguments to an idea of a God as creator are based on strict reasoning and logic. And on some of the terms that they use from the educational historical context are representative of hidden and nameless deities of other nations, such as Para-Brahma. And that this naming is only to be found as the prototype of an absolute principle. And that this prototype is that underlying what we're copied, and it is not God because it is not a God. It goes on to create the distinction between what is supreme and what is not supreme. and encouraging the idea of cause as supreme and effect as not supreme. And that this Parabrahman is the infinite cosmic space in the highest spiritual sense, and it's unchanging, pure, free, and an undecaying supreme root. Because this principle exists as a non-existent essence, it cannot be considered a creator. And the knowledge of this absolute spirit is itself the essence of that absolute spirit. So therefore, it is not the fire, but it is the essence of the fire. The flame and fire and flame destroy the body of an arhat, but their essence makes him immortal. One of the nicest ideas we found in this part is unfolded for us as that before the reproduction of the phenomenal universe, the universe was the self. And that there are no attributes in this essence of spirit is not a negative but an infinite quality. And therefore, the spirit is the unconscious cause. Therefore, not a finite creator or limited being. The second, is like a paragraph, goes on to illuminate how the pantheists echo the Upanishads, because they do not deny a creator or a collective aggregate of creators, but only refuse to attribute creation to an infinite principle. So this absolute cause is passive, therefore, because it is the unconditioned state of oneness, homogeneous, and it is only limited in man's perception, because it is the supreme all, and therefore ever invisible, changeless, and can have no attributes. So this absoluteness is the preconditioned nature of all that manifests, which would be its emanation. And to ascribe to any two absolutes beingness is not logical. There cannot be a universe created infinite and a principle preceding it infinite. So in the sense of the perception of man, this what is the eternal nature of man is non-being. But only beingness, that sense of senses, beingness. And that this beingness is stated by the philosophy in this prelude to its most deepest study, to expand into the universe periodically. And it ends with Narayana, who is that child of Brahman, moving on the abstract waters of space, is transformed into the waters of concrete substance, moved by him, who now becomes the manifested word, or logos, which it does mention up in the beginning, is that secondless reality.
Well, now becomes the impossible to ask a question about what that which has no attributes, which is beginningless and endless. In fact,
we read on the second paragraph of the first page, with them, Parabrahman is a passive because an absolute cause. We're trying to get our minds around the fact that it's an absolute cause and therefore passive. Now we assume, it goes on to say unconditioned. Is that another way of saying, for these purposes, unconditioned?
Well, we have to look at it in the sense of that which is unmanifest. It exists in but it is existence itself. We try to comprehend what it is that is eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent, and we have a very finite mind. So what happens is our imagination, our intuition are tested, that we have to expand upon our limitless, our limited means of perception to consider that which is limitless. So being passive means that it exists, but even passive to our minds is a description of something that it conjures up.
We have to be careful of the words that we even use, because truly we couldn't say that the absolute exists. We can say that it is. Anything that is, it exists is manifested in the absolute. We can say that it is.
And which brings to mind that how words are means of describing something, but in the last sentence, when the word was made manifest, you know, so words are very important for the comprehension or the understanding of this idea. Yes.
If we try to draw a connection with our own nature, and we have a sense of I, we know that fundamentally that I is the cause of everything we do. And yet, if we pick up our hand and write a letter, we know that that's being performed by other agencies and forces that than that I. That I is passive, it's the muscles and the nerves and the ideas in the mind and the desires, all those things that are manifested are actively involved. But that I is sort of the passive witness of all that's going on. So maybe that helps us.
Well, we would think that would be a very good analogy. And analogies are ways of understanding these ideas. That if we think about what was just said, that what in us is unchanging and becomes the witness of all that is changing. Another, perhaps, an analogy for that which is passive.
even a witness has an active following. So this is a very difficult thing for me to understand. And the only part of it that makes sense is the fact that this mind is incapable of understanding. The act of understanding is an active thing. So whatever this nothingness is, it's impossible to try to get to know it, because the act of knowing is active, and that, you know, takes you out of that space.
Yes. All that is true. But we are, the philosophy states, we are a drop in that great ocean. We are a ray of that great sun. So we identify as sentient beings using our senses to find our way in this world in which we live and make sense of it. That as we stumble and fumble through life, we begin to realize that we are the creators of everything that comes to us. And not by chance or by misfortune, but by plan and design. And we say, well, how can that be? Well, we are evolving from within outward. So we have ideas that we may fancy as who we are, but they become the limits or the obstacles for us to realize our true nature. Okay? Now, you look up here and you direct your attention. The answer is not up here. We can only direct the conversation. These ideas must be digested and assimilated to your own perspective in life, because we all come from a different place and different experiences. And if it doesn't relate to us or doesn't make sense to us, we struggle with it. And then if we do not come to some kind of realization, we let it slip by. We do not take it as ours. It is something we just, but if we consider something and we check it and we test it and we verify it, there are things that we find that are true. And lo and behold, we come to a place like this and all these other people realize that too or see that same truth. In the very back.
Yes. You said about words. We always forget, though, that words are traps because we have already defined what they mean for ourselves. So we hear them and we think we're hearing something that agrees with us. We can only say that the absolute is passive if we also say it is active, because there's no contrast. It's impossible for us to wrap our minds around the infinite, we think, unless we consider space or mathematics. We know mathematics are infinite in any direction, but they come from naught, from nothing. And nothing is not active or passive. It simply is. So we think we have to be careful about our own meaning of the words we use.
And we find with mathematics that all comes from naught. But it is dual. When manifestation takes place, it is dual. It has the pair of opposites then become a means of describing the existence in which we find ourselves, or we understand the contrast, because it has the world of matter and spirit. It is no longer that absolute. In the very back, question.
And then to go along with this, the very last sentence, on the front page. For in this all lies concealed its co-eternal, co-evil emanation and inherent radiation. So there is something in the all that is responsible for manifestation. We had a hard time with that.
Well, again, words. Responsible. we find that everything is within the absolute, but nothing is within the absolute. It is, but it is not. It is eternal. It is present. It is past, it is future. It is everything, but it is nothing. It is no thing, as again with numbers. But then it is everything, is all of nature. Back.
We find that sheet that goes all on space, into the four different, as it states, that reading of the idea of space, after you read all of it, it can sort of help us understand this idea of an absolute. Because it is true, it says it's the eternal coming, the going and becoming. We can't find an end to space. We know it exists, and if I take something out of space, it doesn't interfere with space. This is, we found, very helpful.
We think they're very important ideas that we've been given, and we should perhaps read them. One, space as the all cannot evolve or manifest something outside of itself. Two, space is the only physical reality that is not an object of perception, and it is the only mental concept that is not subject to perception. Three, space is both an absolute void and a conditioned fullness. And four, the fullness of space is sevenfold in its manifestation, from its undifferentiated to its most differentiated degree of substance. Now, I'm sure that clears everything up for everyone. Yes.
In the earlier paragraph, the first paragraph, the definition of the problem, I think spells it out very for me, very clearly, that the Paramatman is not God because it is not a God. It is supreme as a cause, not supreme as effect. Paramatman is simply as a secondless reality. The all-inclusive cosmos, or rather the infinite cosmic space, in the highest spiritual sense, of course. Parabrahman, neutral, being the unchanging, pure, free, undecaying, supreme root, the one true existence, Paramatma, and the absolute chit and chaitanya, or intelligence, consciousness, cannot be a cognizer for that. Can have no subject of cognition. I think the whole paragraph explains the paragraph as not all inclusive, that's everything, zeal, active, or passive, or.
Yes.
The root.
Yes. I mean, all these words to each of us, some have some relevance or some understanding. So we think, oh, that's what it is. But it is not.
The words are symbols. In themselves, the only, you said, the only meaning they have is that which we give to them. But by reading them, the many different ways it's expressed, it arouses in us certain ideas. And it is through those ideas we can directly get an intuition of what is being talked about. Knowledge seems to come out of nowhere within us. Yet it had to be there, but it didn't manifest. And so we think that even the word education means to bring out. So that very idea helps us understand how there can be an absolute principle that's everywhere. And periodically there manifests its expression, or it seems to come out of everywhere and nowhere at once, but it had to always be there in some degree.
Yes. Again, we go back to the purpose of this work is to stimulate the intuition and imagination. So as stated, these words, as we may even struggle to say them, but the ideas evoke in us our intuitive nature, that storehouse of knowledge which we all have. We just do not know how to tap into it. In the very back.
Going back, pardon us, to the question at the bottom about the last line of the first page, that all lies concealed. It was mentioned earlier about that which lies within us and is the witness to that which happens on the outer plane. Well, the beginning of that sentence says, in the sense and perception of finite beings, and then it goes on, all lies concealed. So it's again expressing what we experience on this plane, that spiritual essence lies concealed in our physical, from our physical senses. But it
what
is...
What page is this on?
The bottom of verse of age. It was asked if you
remember.
The whole sentence is, in the sense and perception of finite beings, that is non-being in the sense it is the one beingness, for in this all lies concealed its co-eternal and co-evil emanation and or inherent radiation. So periodically it manifests and then is drawn back within. This, the analogy is to ourselves on this plane. It is concealed to us on this plane, but we know periodically we become aware of it and the powers we have from it. And periodically we focus back again on this outer plane. So it's analogous to us in our state as well.
And what is being done is we struggle with the ideas and the concepts to put them in words that we understand or that we can relate to. And so what happens is that when we concentrate on these ideas, we become single-minded. And we consider this idea. We have to use our imagination. In its highest aspects, we have to. Because when we consider it, we leave the limits of our ordinary imagination. Because our ordinary imagination is more or less fanciful, if anything. But to go beyond that, we have to have something to draw it out.
What I get stuck on when you say we have to use our imagination, my take on imagination is it's not me at all. So there's nothing I can do to encourage the imagination. It just comes forth through me. So I don't get that
part. Well, do we not direct everything in our life? Even though we say it just comes to us, well, we direct it, we prompt it, and we're saying we prompt it with these words, with these ideas, because without a prompting, why would the imagination go there? Why would you even consider that? Why did you come into these rooms? Because you're looking for something to prompt that true nature within yourself, because you know there's something, there's truth to be found and to be realized. And because we struggle in this mundane world with all the suffering and things that are not harmonious, we look for that harmony. Or is there a harmony? We question, we look, and we question. That's how we've all come here. We have this burning desire to know the truth. Now, no one's telling me that this is the truth. You take this, you memorize it, and you live by it. No. You're saying, here, take these ideas. Consider them. prompt the imagination. See what it arouses in us. See if there is any kind of reaction to that action. And become aware that we are an aspect of that absolute, unchanging essence. How we determine that, how we understand that, is the journey. And it is not without struggle, because if we are not struggling, we're satisfied. And as human beings, we're not satisfied, because how life is changing. Everything is changing around us. There is nothing that is constant. And we yearn for that which is constant and unchanging. Somewhere to stand. Each day, where do we stand? We need to find that in ourselves. In fact,
in finding that, we only find one thing that is unchanging and constant in ourselves. And like the absolute, it can never be expressed. And that is the sense of I. But like that sentence that's been under question, we have active and inactive periods. We are active and we are passive. We go through a cycle daily of activity and then rest, and still it is the same I that returns and can never be expressed even in that new day. So we can find within our own experience examples of these ideas.
We think that that's what each of us needs to do, is to find the relationship of these ideas to my life, to our life, to how we live our life. You know, that there is a universal oneness, so that when the words in our declaration say, a true conviction of universal brotherhood, it makes us consider that which we've known to that which is true.
To follow up on that last contribution, when we first wake up in the morning, we become aware of ourselves as I, on this plane of consciousness. The I manifests. You might say it becomes active, but it's always been there. It's just we are not actively aware of it on this plane of existence. You think that could be an analogy for deity or oneself that is changeless, constant, eternal, yet is not always in a period of active manifestation of pushing itself. And so that gets into this last sentence that we were talking about. When this perception of ourselves as finite being, the totality of it is unaware, we are unaware of the totality of it, we can only become aware of it.
But a portion of it, yes.
A portion of it, yes.
And when we are frustrated in our complete understanding of these ideas, we endeavor to try harder to understand them. And we always turn to the Bhagavad Gita, because this idea permeates it. But it does it in a way that shows us how a life can be lived with these ideas considered part of our devotion. We become devoted to that which is unmanifest. And it shows how it can be done by being single-minded, by not looking for the results or the fruits of one's labors or one's works, but to give it up become non-attached, unattached, to renounce. But all these things, again, are words. And they're only, and we use them with each other to remind each other that we are all really doing the same thing in a way, but we're trying to understand what that universal brotherhood really means. Yes.
That's the perfect answer to the question about imagination. Even to understand the words we're speaking, at some point we imagined these guttural sounds to be symbols. And at some point we imagined those symbols to be what we call letters, and in a certain order they equal a word, sentence or a paragraph. We've used our imagination at every point in our learning. We are challenging it with these ideas, but we were starting out, as was said, in the very beginning with symbols. There's the point in the circle. There's the line. There's the cross. We are challenging our imagination at every step of the way. Even if we don't feel like we're using it, it's required to think, to understand, to symbolize, to cognize. It's, Einstein said, it's more important than knowledge because it's the first step in that journey.
Yes.
We're just thinking how very strange it is that we're told that when infant humanity, or we as thinkers, incarnated into the human forms, that we were instructed by higher beings, we were given agriculture and science and art and music, all the things that we would need, but there was no such thing as speech because it wasn't necessary, because we heard and understood each other mind to mind, and we imagined that is the true language of symbolism. And maybe in our imagination, that's what we're trying to get back to really understand each other.
Well, we would think that is exactly what we are doing. You know, it's stated that we have come from spirit. We've descended into matter. And we have reached that lowest point. And now we are reascending back into spirit. So that which was will be again. So we see all kinds of things that we think are not natural, but everything within nature is natural. We just do not know our place in relationship to it. Yeah. Yes?
The other aspect of imagination presented was that it's something that flows through an individual. True, as stated, imagination is a faculty of mind. Which makes the idea presented to us that even in our minds we cannot imagine any idea that did not already previously exist somewhere in the universe. And the student raises an absurd example. HB says, yes, you couldn't even imagine that if it didn't exist in prototype. So even there, in the world of ideas, they always exist at some level, but they require a mind or an intelligence to manifest it or imagine them into, or direct them, as we stated, into action.
Yes, and which draws us to, as children we grew up loving fables and mythology and fantastic stories of giants and winged monsters and all kinds of fancy, pygmies and little people, you know, just, you know, Jason and the Argonauts, and I mean, all these fancies, and HBV tells us every story, every fable has a root of truth or a seed of truth that can be found in it. And it really tells the history of man, of humanity. And it becomes another awakening of something within us.
I really like the idea of the imagery of intuition being kind of a conduit to understand, you know, the void, because something comes out of nowhere. So I've been associating the imagination with the intuition. I don't know if that's appropriate, but so my goal in the recent years has been to get to my intuition. But it seems to me that any thoughts take me further away from that and block my intuition. So right now, my ultimate goal is to find that intuition, to find the imagination. But from my perspective, the imagination, if it's using somebody else's symbols or words or thoughts, that's not really imagination. That's just, you know, my egoic mind, you know, putting together stuff that I've heard in different places. I guess I'm visualizing the imagination or the intuition as something that comes out of nowhere. Truly is original thought. Maybe there's no such thing as original thought.
Well,
I'm confused.
Being confused is good. It's good. We all know where that place is. That there is no original thought. You know, every artist at some point goes, gosh, that's just a symbol for that, or that's a symbol for that, or that's not original. And they all search and yearn for that which is unique. Well, it all exists. And the faculties of mind, as mentioned, thought, will, feeling, imagination, and memory. Those are the faculties of mind. But it's through those faculties of mind which we begin to become the director of our own life, using those faculties, rather than the passive participant of life, that whatever comes to me, okay, I deal with it there, I deal with tomorrow, it comes to me, I take it, I'm out of it. But we become, through those senses or those faculties, we direct our life. And to direct our life, you need a foundation. You need somewhere to stand that's unchanging, that becomes your gateway or doorway into reality. Because right now we're looking at what? It's not reality, it's what we think is reality. This is not real because it comes and it goes, it's changing. And we know that we make what we see either pleasant or unpleasant. We make it that way. We interpret that way, we create it that way, because what comes to us, we react to it, and therefore create again. So the same creative force that is this absolute principle, which we are, creates from what? From nothing. What is our mind? What are these faculties? All these things become a great mystery, only to be unraveled not by someone telling you, hey, this is what you do, this is how you consider that. But we can help each other by prompting words or ideas that will let us better understand what we already think we understand.
Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. But theosophy says, my use of it, my inspiration from it is new and is original. It is me taking it and using it. Everything comes from one universal mind. We're all sparks of it. So we can't find anything new, but our use and expression of it is new. HPB says some people never use the higher mind at all. They think in ordinary ways about everything. But another individual will see a cabbage and realize that it's a work of art, and it will lead their imagination in all kinds of directions. So we always have the choice of how we're going to use our mind. And if we turn it to the higher, it isn't wrong that it belongs to everybody. It should. It is universal.
Well, how do we find that enthusiasm for life? that enthusiasm for life.
Define the word. And theos, in God.
In God.
Yes.
Yes. And no better way than what we are doing now. That we become enthusiastic when we realize that we are gods in potential, that all we need to do is have the right effort. And our ideas and our imagination are purified in the light of truth. And we fall down, we get up. We fall down, we get up. We fall down, we get up. And that's how it is. You lose when you don't want to get up. Well, we often have that feeling, but we get up. Because that is all that we can do, is keep on trying. Yes?
Well, I've always listened to what the teacher said, that she had a hard time because the English language was so difficult to convey the ideas. And that sometimes underneath there's a statement that we first get grasp what is said, but don't grab it too tight. And in this example, in flight, you're either flying or not flying, but there's one thing that holds both of them together, and that word is flight. But you can't generally describe flight. Because what is flight? The first thing you're going to say, well, flight. Or well, what is non-flight? So we have to sort of get our thing lay back, be easy as we approach these terms. And it's done in this case, they mentioned being and non-being. Well, those two seem to be opposite. Still, I'm not satisfied with the idea of being and not being. There has to be something else.
We think the comment alludes to the fact that there is never an end to learning. There is never an end to understanding. If we go back to the basic theosophical principle that the universe is evolving from within outward. Well, that's how we are evolving, from within outward. And there is no, it is limitless. But we are in a limited existence. But what is beyond the greatest of adepts? What is beyond those that have learned all that can be learned? Well, we do not think or imagine for a moment that it is the end, because it has no end. But our imagination is being tested by these ideas. We cannot comprehend that. So the fact that we present these ideas before our minds we awaken the will to know the truth. Because we are all willful beings. We become through will. That what we want, we do. We just have to want different things. We want to know our true nature. And this class this morning is just the beginning of an understanding of our true nature.
Now, several times this morning the ideas presented to make these ideas practical. And one way we can make it practical is realize that at times the self is not a passive observer. It's very much attached and involved in its experience, very sensitive, feels like it's easily hurt, set back, defeated. And yet, in the Bhagavad Gita, it also describes the self as an enduring passive witness that is unaffected by pleasure and pain, gain and loss, victory and defeat. It's, we think that that's a practical lesson, that we can be like that passive space or passive deity in the sense of not being moved or disturbed by whatever before us is changing in the affairs of our lives, whether we think it's pleasurable or not.
Yes, to find that position, to find that, with that seat where we sit in our true nature, that little man who sits on that throne of the heart, what is our true nature?
Sometimes we can do that almost by accident. We'll be in the middle of something and we'll be saying, I can't believe I'm saying that. I was never going to say that. Why am I saying that? Or I can't believe I just lost my temper that way. And we see that there's a side of us that is witnessing and taking note, if you will. So if we could hold on to moments like that that show us there is something more to me than the mind that interacts on this plane. There's a higher side of me. If we could do that, we come to understand these ideas better.
Yes, and we would become, or it's asked that we become devoted to that understanding of that higher nature, whether it's limited now, but through a devotion to that which is highest within us, that which is universal, that which is not separate from all that exists. The only way we can understand it or be that is by trying, by endeavoring to assimilate all that we think we understand and know. If we know it, we can assimilate it and make it a living fire in our lives, a light that will shine for all to see. And again, enthusiasm becomes a part of that brilliance of that flame.
Short and quick. Very short, and it's been mentioned that on the internet everywhere. We're about to discover the God particle called the boson, and it breaks our heart. We have a lot of compassion. Because we attend these meetings, it's just to listen. And we divide our ideas, and here we have this, and then we see this, and we are amazed at the language being used to describe the boson part, the God part. Compassion and charity are absolutely necessary. And then are we doing enough ourselves to break these things so we get a better idea?
Have a good journey, my friend. And we would like to remind all of us, or all of, that these rooms are kept open through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. All are welcome to participate. Meeting adjourned.